Thank you. So, once again, why don't we take a few moments and draw into the power that brought us here and keeps us here, and we'll start. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, we're back together again for step three. Before we start, would anyone like to make a comment or ask a question before we dive in? Okie dokie. I know it's in the book. Okay. So, step three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. So decision is an interesting word. Decision comes from a Latin root that is the same root of the word incision. So a decision means to cut. So I'm going this way in my life, I'm going to cut that, and I'm going to go that way. And a decision is a tremendously powerful spiritual act. If I make that decision, you know, well, this guy told me early on in my sobriety, he said, Mickey, you may or may not have taken that third step decision when you made it, he says, but I'll guarantee you God did. Okay, this is the how and why of it. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. I love this program because it's just practical. It's pragmatic. You know, we don't play God. Why? Because it doesn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. So this man's talking to me and he said, Mickey, would you like a director in your life? He says, you know, you've spent your life like a loose cannon on a rolling deck. Would you like to have somebody tell you what to do? I said, please. So a director tells the actor when to come on, what to say, when to shut up, and when to leave. I need a director. Because on my own, I wander off into the wings and forget it. The metaphor blows away. So next we decided, okay, he is the principal, we are his agent. So I was in advertising for 25 years. He's the principal. My client was the principal. I was his agent. I was in an advertising agency. My job was to represent. Can you imagine? We are agents for God. That's a pretty good job. We are God's agents, and look who he picked. Right? He is the Father, and we are his children. Dad, can I have the keys for the car tonight? I don't do a lot of highfalutin, you know what I mean? Because it's just basic. I'm going to turn to my Father. It doesn't matter if our earthly father wasn't all that great. We're talking about a Father who actually made us. Sorry, my brain is going. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Again and again, there's a tendency in our fellowship to hold the big book away from any religious trappings or any overlap from any organized anything that's been around maybe 2,000 years or whatever. And maybe we need a new pair of glasses. Maybe we need to understand that what AA has done is cobbled together some of the best things that have ever been presented in the world and offer them to us. How in the world did they come to the conclusion this virulent disease could be tamed by spirituality and God? We don't have to call it God. We can call it whatever we want. But we have to have the concept that this God is higher than me. Einstein said, if you are looking to solve a problem, you can't go to the same level of thinking that created it. So I have to have a higher source. I have to go to that higher source. And I would love it if it was like a remote. Ding, new channel, and I'm cooking, you know what I mean? It's not like that. It's like blood, sweat, and tears. It's blood, sweat, and tears. And in the process of that, I get transformed. In the beginning, God made Mickey. Then Mickey made Mickey. And the whole dance after that is for me to go back to God so that I can be transformed into the Mickey that God made. You know what I'm saying? The man who's with you today has been kind of a stranger to me. But that person that I was is infinitely more a stranger. I was bad news. I was bad news and I hurt people. And when I drank, I was an animal. I don't think I look much like an animal right now, do you? Some guy's going, no. So my father, his religion was basketball and football. And he would play for whatever high school had the best team. He played for the Catholics, he played for whoever. And so we lived in Europe and he had this exalted position. And so one day we had a private audience with the Pope. And my mother said that my father came back where we were staying in Rome in this hotel. And he stood out on the balcony and he was like in turmoil. He was just in turmoil. He had no religion. My mother was Catholic. My father didn't. And so I prayed for him for years and years and years that he would join us. And when I was in the eighth grade, my father converted to Catholicism. My father was 5'6". I was 6'3". I could stare down on the top of my father's head. And you know what he said? He said to me one day, he said, Mickey, you know, I never met a man who's taller than me. That'll give you an idea what my father was. He wasn't brutal, but he was, he had Popeye arms. And I remember after he got out of the Air Force, he went to work for Martin Marietta in the, you know, the missile silos going up through South and North Dakota. And they came to meet with him, and he was drinking in a bar with one of the representatives from that corporation, and the guy was starting to irritate my dad. And my dad just reached over and knocked him right out of his chair. Just one shot, boom, okay, and then they got back up and kept drinking, I presume. And he became a Catholic. And my father could, you talk about the lion turning into the lamb, my father could not say the word God without crying. So I got to see these things, that these tamings that can go on. We were reborn. Now, I didn't feel like new power flow in so much. It wasn't like an instant deal. It was fumble and fall and get up and do this thing and keep seeking and keep seeking. And thank God I have this life companion, because we've always been able to talk to each other. And we've walked this road together, and I've gotten in some jams that I have gotten into worse jams sober than I ever got into drinking. Let's just put it out there. I mean to tell you, serious stuff. Eyes wide open, what we other people might refer to as stone cold sober, which I guarantee you I wasn't. I had all the other demons and everything else in me. And so how long is the process? I listened to this lady who talks, and she says, you will wait until you don't know you're waiting. You will wait until you don't know you're waiting. Because we're like hanging out for God. We're hanging out for that power. We're looking for something to fill our lives. Plus, a little money wouldn't hurt. And we live that way. Sometimes they call it living like the lilies of the field. Solomon in all his glory is not arrayed as one of these. And God feeds the birds, and he feeds the lions, and he will feed you. And he will feed me. So, I'm going this way, and then I make a decision, and I'm going to go that way. Now, there's a dark road in front of me at that point of my life. There's a dark road in front of me. I don't know what's in that, but I got a fire-breathing dragon behind me. Right? So it's a choice. Go back there and be incinerated and reverse, or go down that road. What's going to be down that road? Who knows? Who knows? God knows.
So, my turning my will and my life over to God was, I don't know when it happened. I know they said, you know, say the third step prayer. And I said, okay, I said the third step prayer. You don't always know that everything has changed. Mm. How I know that everything had changed was when, now I was describing my father, and he's like, he was a big man, and he looked like God, you know, he looked like Absolutely. The representation of God, with his flowing white hair, very tall, big man, big voice, and I was intimidated. I was the baby of the family, and I was really intimidated. I was telling you, I was shy, I was introverted. I would never have contradicted him, because he was also a brilliant debatist, okay? He could debate anybody out of anything, because he had so much knowledge in his head. So I was going through this thing of finding God, turning my will over to God bit by bit. I did not convert to Catholicism for, I don't know, 15 years. I did that on my own. It was not, you know, pushed. But I knew that I had turned my will and my life over to God when I went home one time to Indiana. He was really against organized religion. I mean, really against it. And I sat down with him. I had gone to visit my mom and my dad. My mom ended up the first day in hospital with a heart attack. And so it was my dad and I. That was it. I had never spent that much time with my dad alone. And so we would talk. And I knew that I had to tell him. I said, Dad, I have become Catholic. And it was like if I had said, I don't know what would be the equivalent, you know, I don't know. I can't think of anything quite that horrible for him to hear. And because when I was growing up, you know, he didn't do a lot of fatherly things, but he did tell me a few things. He said, don't marry a musician. They never make any money. Don't marry an alcoholic. They never get well. Don't get pregnant before you're married. It's two strikes against you, and marriage is hard enough. And don't marry a Catholic. They have horns, you know. They're weird. And all four. And I wasn't rebellious. It wasn't like I was choosing, you know, all the things that he told me. But anyhow, so he was really against that. And so, you know, in fatherly manner, he said, well, you know, I always taught my children to find their own path, and that's great. You do what you think is right, which sounded great. And I was like, whoa, you know, I've gotten over this hump. And then he spent the next 7 days telling me why that was absolutely the stupidest decision I had ever made. And so not only had I told him something really, really bad on his radar, but now I had to be engaged in a debate with him about why God didn't exist. So, you know, that's a tough one. You know, how can you prove that God exists? And that's how he took the conversation. And I realized I really had made that corner into faith in a higher power. Because I just prayed, and I kept my mouth shut, and I prayed, and I would answer some of his questions, and I prayed, and I got this serenity as I was sitting with him. And just before I left to go back to Colorado, he was a scientist, and I said, Dad, and he was also a poet in his own right, not published, but he loved to write poetry, and he wrote love poetry. And so, you know, I had asked God the whole time, you know, what do I say, because I have no, you know, somebody comes at me, I get intimidated, and I shut up, you know. And so I would ask God, what do I say, and I didn't say much of anything. And then finally, the last day, I said, Dad, do you believe in love? He said, oh, yes, I believe in love. And I said, can you put that under a microscope? And he didn't say anything. And I said, I know that God exists. I can't put it under a microscope, can't prove it, but I know it. And in the years since, there were times when we were in Indiana, and his, how he gave up a little bit of his power was, I remember one Thanksgiving, he asked Mickey to say a prayer at dinner time.
Big doings.
That was miraculous. I mean, and after he died, we went to clean out his apartment, and the funny thing was, he had more books on God than I have ever seen in my life. I think he was, you know, he was searching. So, you know, but the point is that I knew that me taking on my dad in the sense that I did, I had committed to that third step. I had said, I turn my will and my life over to you, even in the presence of my dad. And I am so grateful that I had that moment that I chose God over my dad, that God was a bigger power than my dad, and my dad was a pretty big power, but I chose God, and I know that that was the culmination of years of building up to that. And if, you know, when I got in at first, you know, I didn't know how to relate to God. My sponsor said, just turn little things over. See what happens. Little things, bigger things, little bit bigger things, bigger things, big things. And I've never been let down. And so my decision is continual. Sometimes it's hard because, you know, life changes. And you know, now you have grown children. I mean, little children are hard to turn over, but grown children are kind of hard to turn over. And situations are hard to turn over. And some of the things we've gone through are hard to turn over. But every single thing that you turn over and you recognize how God has answered that prayer, it builds. And it builds to a huge mountain. So that's all.
Thank you, Marie. So it would be lovely if we just had a three-step program. You just go along, you do this, and you make a decision, and bingo, you know, you're rocking and rolling. So this guy said to me, Mickey, he says, I want to put a pitcher of water in your imagination, a pitcher full of water in front of you and a glass full of water. I would like you to pour some water from that pitcher into that glass. Can you do it? I said, no. He said, why? I said, because the glass is full. And he said, what do you need to do to get water into that glass? I said, I have to empty it, which is 4 through 9, right? Because I've got so much of me standing between me and God, because I'm alcoholic, I'm self-centered, I'm frightened, and I'm dishonest and resentful and all of those things. So those need to be tended to as we go down this path. I loved Marie's father, and I loved her mother. And these were really good people. These were good people. And it wasn't like, well, they're good people, but they're defective. They are good people. It just doesn't happen to be our path. And plus, if I thought being good was going to solve the problem, I'd have been dead years ago. No way, man. Because I'm a prey to misery and depression. I can't control my emotional nature. It comes up like a skyrocket. And I'm involved. I've just mailed something out of my mouth that my rear end's going to have to pay the postage on. And it goes on like that. And have you noticed how embarrassing alcoholism is? You have to bring him or her into the room. And I'm alcoholic when I go into this room. I'm alcoholic when I get on that airplane. And here we are. So it's like I have to have a governor. I have to have a governor that will ratchet down this guy in my heart. And I get that in here, not perfectly. We're going to share things with you as we go that are really pretty tough. And we're going to do it because, you know that expression, we've all laughed about it as we come into AAG, you don't look like an alcoholic. Well, you know, it would be easy in a weekend like this to just say, you know, and then the sun came out and we're just like cruising along madly in love and it's like that. Well, we are madly in love. But there are other things that have happened that you need to know about, because alcoholism never goes away. I'm going to repeat it. Alcoholism never grows away. What we are mostly, there's a German word called Realpolitik. Realpolitik means the real core of what's going on. So it's like in the eighth grade, there was a civics class, and this is how you pass a bill through Congress. You know, and they jotted all out, and that is how you pass a bill through Congress. But the realpolitik of it is that this guy puts in a little pork barrel here. You're trying to get, you know, safety badges for the crossing guards in Mississippi. And you start to put that bill through Congress. By the end of it, man, you've built a new highway up through Alaska. You know what I mean? You've done all this kind of stuff. The realpolitik of Alcoholics Anonymous is that we, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of this program, we go back to sleep. We go back to sleep. And if I want to say this so I'm sure it gets said. What we do as a practice, and I'm sure you have your own, is I go through the steps formally, the 12 steps formally, with my sponsor every year. And we take the people that we sponsor through the steps formally every year. And Marie has an explanation for that. Would you care to share that, Marie?
Well, you know, you have a house. You do the dishes every day, hopefully. I'm not that good.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, there's a little leeway there. But, you know, that... If that were all you did, you'd have kind of a mess on your hands. You have to go through and really clean. Hopefully, well, not hopefully, but typically, spring cleaning, okay? And if you don't do that, the buildup under the cabinets and under the chairs and, you know, I mean, there's so much stuff that builds up that you gotta do a big cleaning to keep that household running. So
you got to move the fridge, you got to move the stove, you got to get back in there and clean things. And that's what going through the steps every year has done for me and does for the people we work with. Now, you might think that going through the steps this year would be sort of a review of last year. That is not what has happened. Every time I go through the steps, I'm dealing with what happened in the seventh grade or when I was 7 years old, or a new light goes on. And it's been happening again right now. And I don't think we'll ever get to the bottom of it. How many layers are in a human being? How many layers of the onion are in a human being? Why am I afraid to go into high places? So when I was 19 years old, I went up to Expo 67 in Montreal. And I was on top of the oldest Catholic cathedral in Old Town, Montreal, Notre Dame de Bon Secours. So I'm up there and I got my camera and I'm taking pictures of the town and the neighborhood and everything. And all of a sudden I had an irresistible desire to throw myself off the top of that cathedral. I walked on there, I crawled off, and I've never stopped in a high place having that urge to throw myself off that. Why is that? I have no clue. Is it a constant companion to keep me connect? I have no clue. But you see what I mean? But what's going on with that? Why do we do what we do? Well, all I know to do is seek God, work the program, and try to be a halfway decent human being, and maybe he'll fill in the blanks a little bit. All right. Is there anything you wanted to say?
No, just that Al-Anon doesn't have, they have some good literature, but they do not have directions for working this program. You know, the first three steps, you know, yeah, you got a little bit of direction there, but... when I came into the program 45 years ago, they had no direction at all. They had merry-go-round named denial, brochure, they had, you know, a few other things. But the directions for Al-Anons that has worked and is working in Denver, Al-Anon now, is the directions in the big book. So... it is directly translatable. You know, I have used the big book for the whole time I've been in the program, and it's just a small tweak to be able to translate alcoholism into Al-Anonism. And I do not have the addictive personality for drugs or for alcohol. But there's such a similarity in the mental obsession. One of the things I love the most is that, you know, it's in the big book it says, you know, that alcoholics want nothing more than to drink normally. And they go back to that initial experience that they had with drinking when it was really fun, you know. And so many Al-Anons hold on to the moment that they fell in love. Now the guy's beating them and, you know, gambling all the money away and drinking till he passes out. But the thought is, well, maybe he can be that guy again. Maybe we can get back to that love that we had. And so the, you know, the Big Book is such a tool for Al-Anons. And Fellowship of the Spirit has always been about, for Al-Anons, how do we use the Big Book in our recovery? And so that's kind of where our meetings have been. When we have Al-Anon meetings at Fellowship of the Spirit, it's about how do we use the Big Book in relationship to what we have, what the disease we have.
Thank you, Marie. And you know, how many people would benefit, I'm talking about general population, from doing an inventory of their faults, right? And having somebody to talk to, somebody that they trust, that they could share that with. So it's not like we're doing, you know, something that doesn't benefit everyone. I understand, you know, there's a non-alcoholic member of the General Service Office. And that non-alcoholic member is there in case all the rest of them get wired up with alcohol. There'd be somebody to guard the fort. But it's a 6-year commitment, and invariably that person that's in there benefits deeply from having been around the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So this is good news for everybody. So just P.S., we're going to go into steps 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and whatever coming up. We're not here to talk to anybody about how to do it. How to do it's in the book. We're going to talk about what happens when you do it or what happens when you don't do it. Is this going okay, guys?
Yes.
Shall we break and just stretch our legs? Thank you so much. Oh, wait a minute.
Hold on.
Thank you, Dave. So once again, let's just go into the silence and sit with the power that brought us here and keeps us here.